Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan to tour campus and meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Explore summer classes and more at ltu.edu.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast right here on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Indeed. And we have with us a regular. She's smiling right now.
A longtime friend of the show.
Be careful now. We can't say old friend.
No, old word.
Okay. Tim Bruché, you know, I always get your title wrong at Engage. What's the official title?
I'm officially the director of Engage.
Ah, okay. The director. I got manager down on the sheet here, but I knew it was one. She runs the show. Okay?
And Engage is
any other name, she's the boss.
And right. Engage is a forum for second stage women entrepreneurs run by InForum, which used to be called the Women's Economic Club back in the day.
Very good. It can be taught. Huh?
Back in the day.
Okay. But it is a program that encourages women to take the next step in entrepreneurship.
And, leading to million-dollar businesses, right?
Go down that list again. I love that list about how many jobs and millions and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again, guys. Really appreciate it. So we've had 100 women actually go through the Engage program at InForum. They've created 41 brand-new companies, created 384 jobs. They've been granted 35 patents, and they've gone on to raise $41.8 million in follow-on funding and $9.1 million in government contracts.
Great.
Big money. Doing some great stuff. Yeah, we love that economic boost to the economy.
Yes.
Michigan.
Let me also throw in before you start on your guest here that you are also helping us organize a track at IoT Tech Connect on April 4th at the Troy Marriott. Where's that bell? Okay, there we go. And yours is incubators, accelerators, training, and all that.
Incubators, accelerators, contacts in the ecosystem, and then women in tech.
Yes. They have a women in tech panel that near and dear to your heart. Probably
very
most of your students, right?
Yes, or ex-students. Absolutely. All of the alum from Engage Masterclass.
Okay,
definitely.
Cool. All right. Well, I had to get that in there. We got that out of the way. And now you can go on and interview, who do we have? Amy Swift.
We have Amy today.
I was going to say hip hugger, but it's building hugger. Yes.
That's the first time I've heard that one.
So go ahead.
In the 60s. So it was a perfect segue to have the discussion of Albert Kahn right before this, because Amy's doing amazing things in the city also. So welcome. So glad you're here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So building hugger, really cool name for a company. Tell us where you got that name.
It's a long story and a short story. I had started my career as an architect, and I was working in Chicago, for a big corporate company, and I was on the green track. So I was doing sustainable design there, and everyone would tease me and say, "Oh, you're like a tree hugger," and I'd say, "Well, actually, I'm more of a building hugger. I am pursuing environmental stewardship through being a better steward of the built environment." So that sort of framed my career. Building Hugger has taken on, a life of its own, and especially here doing work in Detroit. So it's taken us to window restoration as being our sort of mainstay here. It was one of the things that after I moved back to Detroit in 2011 and I started doing consulting work, I noticed that there's a real lack of skilled trades, specifically historic trades, and more specifically window restoration. So it's something that I've kind of evolved into doing, and we've been very busy and very successful as we've honed our skills and our processes towards that.
That's very cool. So actually, I saw you shaking your head when we were talking about the police police building earlier. So have you been involved in any restoration?
No. I actually, you don't know how apt it is that we were talking about Albert Kahn, because So I used to teach architectural history at Lawrence Tech, ironically enough.
Yeah. All right.
And one of the, you know, I had an entire lecture on Albert Kahn and his influence, not only locally, but also globally in architecture. And more specifically to my own practice, because Henry Ford is always credited with the development of the assembly line and factory efficiencies. But he was working in tandem with Albert Kahn, and it was Kahn's philosophies of spatial management that really allowed Ford to translate a lot of his scientific management theories into actual working flow on the factory floor. So one of the things that I realized when I started to get into the window restoration business was, I realized really quickly why there were no businesses like this. It's because it's incredibly inefficient and cost heavy and very regulated because we deal with lead paint. And so one of the things that, I have been trying to research and implement is more of a Kahn-based philosophy to the way that we set our shop up and the way that we train our workers and the way that we essentially run our business. So you didn't even know how appropriate it was that I was here on the Albert Kahn Day.
No idea. I thought it was a fortunate coincidence.
All these LTU connections must make your heart warm.
Oh, yes, yeah. It sure does. Yeah, and hopefully my bosses too. Yeah. So, okay.
It's LTU Day at M2 TechCast.
Yeah.
So, Amy, big question I have for you is, what is the biggest misconception that people have about preservation? Because with all of, the Dan Gilberts and such coming in and mm-hmm. doing development in the city, people aren't always looking to preserve. They want to tear down and rebuild. What's so important about the preservation?
I think that the biggest misconception is that preservation is harder that it is anti-development. Preservationists here want to see these buildings come back online and be vibrant and lived in and worked in. And there are better ways to do it or worse ways to do it. Every preservationist that I know here in the city is usually pretty open-minded, maybe compared to other markets where there's a lot more development pressures. I went to school at Columbia, so when we were studying preservation, it was always anti-development, because that's what you had to be in Manhattan. But here, it's a very different story. So I was on the phone with a client today who was, telling me it was harder to work in historic districts, but we don't have trouble working in historic districts because we know the right things to do, and frankly, I think preservationists have a longer vantage point. We are able to look further backwards, and so we're able to also look further forward. I do small scale development myself. I'm in the Building Better Communities class right now that Chase Cantrell that he hosts and organizes, I understand the numbers. I understand, we have to make it work. And we do a lot of structured services for developers and for investors so that they can work in a historic district but also make the numbers work on their spreadsheets. So we understand both. But I think that's the biggest misconception, that we're heels in the dirt and incapable of, coming to any sort of common ground.
Absolutely. And that's fantastic. So have you been involved in the train station at all downtown? Helping
no.
with the windows there?
I mostly just drive by in horror there. But I'm happy that there's no open holes in the building anymore. But actually what they did to put the windows into those openings, they ripped out the central jambs. There used to actually be two double hung windows in each one of those openings, and they ripped the central jambs out in order to put just one piece of glass with taped mullions. Like I said, I'm super happy that it is a stabilized building because, when someone does, it's mothballed, right? It's mm-hmm. instead of boards, there were windows put into those openings. And that's better than what it was. But, and those windows probably won't do for, whatever moves in there in the future. So there'll probably be another window campaign, I would suspect.
I was just curious whether you were familiar with the Ford Piquette Avenue plant in Detroit.
I am a little familiar with
that.
With that
project, because that's been one of their big things, is gradually raising money to redo all those windows.
And they have someone in-house there that actually has a workshop set up and does the repairs on site there. And I've heard of workshops and things like that happening.
So have you seen it? I mean, are they doing a good job?
Yeah, it looks like they're doing a good job. Okay. I haven't actually been to the I don't get out much. I own a business. I work like 80-hour weeks.
Yeah, ask Mike about that. Yeah, okay, yep. Well, yeah, the reason I say that is because Lawrence Tech was involved in a project there too to do a remote robot docent where there would be a robot that would follow the docent around, so you could go on a docent tour virtually on a screen. And the robot would show you all the stuff that, you know, happened at that plant way back when. That was Henry Ford's last plant before Highland Park. And so it was his last plant that didn't have a moving assembly.
Well, what am I supposed to do when I retire and I want something to do on the weekends? The robot is replacing me.
You still have a docent. You still have a docent. It's just the robot follows the docent around and puts the docent's presentation on the internet.
Oh, okay. That's very cool.
That's how it works. Yeah.
Okay.
So they made a robot that would follow a docent around.
Okay. That's well, maybe I can watch it while I'm working late one night.
Yeah.
There you go. We'll get you out. I promise. So one of the questions I was thinking about before getting ready for today. So what role does the preservation of Detroit's historic structures play in its future?
Well, I mean, the reason that people want to move here, that want to stay here and be involved in the city, is because of its history and because it's an active, diverse, crazy little town. And when you get rid of that richness and you put up glass and steel, you really lose the soul of a place. And obviously, we've lost quite a bit already. And there's also, you know, larger issues at play, that vacancy and blight and, you know, half-burnt houses in neighborhood streets.
Like really nice Edwardian mansions with trees growing up in them. Yeah. And stuff like that.
So,
right?
You know, there are challenges still to maintaining what we even still have left. But I think that it's worth the fight to try to figure out how to keep what we do have. I think that preservationists here, like I said, are pretty open-minded in terms of how that gets accomplished. We're fighting the good fight, trying to kind of be a triage nurse out there and save what we can, knowing that we won't be able to save them all.
That's terrific. But you're doing really good work. So two things I really want to be specific about. You're a woman in the trades, which is not common.
Less than 9%.
Exactly. So it's like women entrepreneurs in tech.
Yeah.
Yep,
Well, to note, though, always more than half of my crew are women, and we're right now at about 3/4.
Awesome. And tell me, are you hiring?
Oh my God, yes.
Come on, it's
a Roush question.
We are hiring. I'm interviewing people all across the country, actually, and also locally, because we're hiring for our crew. We do a lot of training in house because we have to. There's no like window school I can hire from. We're also hiring for a sales manager.
Okay, you've got about 30 seconds to tell me this, but I want you to give a commercial for Tembr now. Tell me how Engage has helped you and how great the Engage program is.
We're just starting. So I'm super excited to be a part of it. I've done a lot of sort of entry level, I did the Build Institute. I've done the Michigan Women's Foundation, a Gopher Growth Program, and those are all to kind of get you started. And at this point, we're a $500,000 company, and we're looking to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And I also have several other business ventures that I'm getting going. And so I really, this is what I need to plug
Sounds
into
like
right
me,
now.
You know?
Yeah.
Me in a different form, you know? But
I'm going to leave that one alone.
Yeah, right. Phrase it the way I wanted, but
okay, all right. Well, Tembr, thanks very much for a great segment as always. Tembr Shea was here from Inforum's Engage program with Amy Swift, CEO of Building Hugger. Amy, you got a website?
Go to our Facebook page right now.
Okay, all right. So search for Building Hugger on Facebook, and you will find Amy Swift.
There we are.
All right. Thanks, Timber.
Thank you.
For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan to tour campus and meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Explore summer classes and more at ltu.edu.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.